Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Jamie Dawn Show with a special guest today who I will introduce shortly. But this show, I'm your host, Jamie Dawn, the intuitive astrologer, aka Nomad Crab, because I am a Cancer sun. So I just thought it'd be fun to have that little nickname. And I'm going around following my nose. There's a story behind that, and I should share that one of these days. And I follow the stars to bring you the latest energetic astrological updates with a particular emphasis on relationships. And just a couple of little announcements here at 1-2 Radio. We have wonderful advisors over at 1-2 Listen as well that have regular specials, things like that, that you might want to check out. So please sign up for the newsletter. Also, come find me at 1-2 Listen when I am not in a scheduled appointment, but I love scheduled calls and appointments. That gives us a chance to really carve out some sacred space together. And the other great thing about this show is it is pre-recorded, but if you email me, jamie@jamiedawn.com, I can take a question or two and I'm happy to offer readings on air for you and let you know when that show is coming up so you can get your answer. All right. So that being said, I'm going to introduce my guest. So this particular individual has a passion for helping others. She's an avid traveler and a food enthusiast. She's a family woman, of course, and she is a certified trauma professional and is becoming a advanced grief specialist, as well as studying some EMDR, if you're not familiar with that. It's a very cool technique, which I have used. She specializes in grief and trauma, loss, inner child work, teenage experience, couples counseling, parenting, and really she's just in the business of helping people have better lives, which I love. But even more than that, it's my daughter, Tatiana. Hello, Tatiana. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Of course. I'm so happy you're here because you know how much I just love playing with you. So one of the things I like to do at the beginning of the show, for those of you who are just joining, welcome. And there is interaction at our Facebook page here on 1-2 Radio. So please feel free to comment. And if I can make it into the chat room, I'm happy to do it. But one of the things that we do is we cultivate this heart space when we are starting this show so that we can just ground and really open to whatever wisdom of nuggets that show up for us, and also so that we can create a cohesive resonance for ourselves and hopefully just the collective in general. So I asked my guests to bring something, a poetry, a quote, something for contemplation that just can help us open the heart. So Tatiana, you have a little something.
I do. It's a little surprise for you too, now that I think about it.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So looking forward to it. All right. So do you want to lead us in taking a breath or shall I?
Go ahead. I trust you.
All right. So everyone, just for a moment, if you can, if you're not in the car or you're walking or whatever, but if you can, close your eyes. If not, just take a moment and take one conscious breath in through the heart. And down through the feet, grounding us very deeply into this present moment. And Tatiana, the floor is yours when you're ready.
Thank you. Okay. I'm just going to jump into it.
Excellent.
May we act from the best parts of ourselves, and may we forgive each other when we are not our best. May we fully commit to creating a safe space in each other to always tell the truth. May we call each other out with compassion and encouragement. May we hold each other accountable. May we be each other's spiritual home, the place we can be our vulnerable, open, full selves. May we always strive for betterment, growth, and healing. May we continue to respect each other's boundaries. May we stay open to each other's perspectives. May we stay conscious in our words, actions, and thoughts. May we continue to play and foster our friendship. May we continue to be witness to one another. May we continue to learn from each other, foster one another's dreams and passions, celebrate each other and inspire the other. May we continue to believe in ourselves and our partnership. May we continue to strive to court each other forever and have amazing sex for as long as physically possible together. And in sickness and in health, in hardship and ease, in joy and despair, in certainty and uncertainty, I vow all of this to you.
That sounded like some wedding vows.
Surprise!
That's awesome. No, I have not heard those, but I love it. And of course, I've been announcing it all over social media and podcasts and all that about you guys eloping. Congrats again.
Highly recommend.
Highly recommend. Well, you know what? Let's jump into it. I'll give some astrological stuff later in the show. So we're recording this and it's going to be aired the week of Valentine's Day. So we know that Valentine's Day often has the terrible, terrible, over-sensationalized romantic love attached to it. And I'm not sure where I want to go with that yet, because I want to circle back to the decision that you and your partner, Talbot, made to elope. Because there's a lot of people in the audience who maybe either are engaged or want to be engaged, want to get married, you know, or single and thinking, you know, one day I'll meet that special one and what do I want to do? So, you know, what drove you guys to that decision?
Long road. I sighed because I was thinking about how I should start this, but marriage for me was always very important. And for him, couldn't care less. It was never something on his radar. And I know a lot of people like that, where it's just like, I'm with my person. We're good. We're committed. It's fine. It's not something that I need. I had to do a lot of very deep work on why it was so important to me. And he was very hesitant, very resistant, because the only thing he saw growing up was people marrying their, you know, high school sweethearts. They got very complacent. They got angry. They got divorced. It was nasty, so on and so forth. And it was always these very big traditional, conventional weddings and affairs. And there was always family drama. He had seen weddings where people ended up in fistfights and thousands of dollars. And he was just like, that's not for me. I don't want to do that. And I can't remember where he had heard the idea of eloping, of just doing it ourselves. And he was like, oh, I could do that. That would be okay. And he never really articulated that to me until afterward, but that was what worked for him, was that and that was his stipulation, was we can do this, but we're not allowed, we're not telling anybody. And I said, but mom's going to want to be there. And he said, yeah, but you can't tell her. Like, literally nobody can know. And I said, okay, fine. And there's a caveat to that, which was that we were hoping to have our two best friends there, his and mine. And that if one of them couldn't go, then neither would go. We were going to make it very fair and equal. And so it turned out that it ended up just being the both of us. And we got to do it our way. We got to use credit card points and book an awesome hotel room and you know, just let people know we're going to be in whatever location we chose for a few days or whatever. And we ate a beautiful meal the night before. I, you know, had been picking out my outfit stuff and he got his outfit. It was very nonchalant. And we hired a wedding photographer. That was probably the most expensive part, but she was worth it. And we just got to do it without drama. You know, I watched my brother's wedding, your son's wedding, unfortunately, at least in my perspective, evolve into making it certain family members making it about themselves, how they were owed certain things, how, you know, we have memories of these outfits and they were inappropriate when they weren't, just making non-issues issues. And it was dramatic for no reason. Talbot didn't want that. And I was like, sure, that's fine. You're giving me what I want. This, for me, that was the one of the greatest acts of love that he has ever given me, is something that I have wanted for so long that he couldn't care less about. But it was so important to me, he was willing to do it. And the caveat for him
is... How long
were
you guys together before you eloped?
10 years.
10 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's huge.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sorry, you were saying, I interrupted. And his thing.
Oh, just the caveat was that we had to do it his way, and in a sense, and I was okay with that. So it was there was give and take, because it was important for me that it was also important for him. And I think that in very traditional aspects, it's all about the bride. And I think historically, yes, that is how it's been, right? There's the dowry, there's the land, there's the the money, the things that come with her, she's property, blah, blah, blah. And now we're present. And it's like, oh, it's this huge extravagant thing. We have these bridezillas, everything has to be perfect. We're spending thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars and time and effort. And oh my God, it's exhausting. And then you end up probably depressed afterwards because there's, you know, the wedding blues, right? You're planning this thing for so long and it's this huge thing. And then almost everybody that I've heard says, when we got to the day, I don't remember it. Well, then what was the point? You didn't get to eat the food. You didn't get to try the cake, which is probably the most important part. Did you dance? No, I was busy saying hi to 300 people. It's about the two of you guys. That's my perspective. It's about the two of you. You're not creating a family and creating a marriage with everybody else. Is it nice to have family members that have raised you, that have been part of your relationship, that have been supportive to be there? Sure. If you can make that happen, but that's not feasible for everybody. So again, for a lot of people, like if you've come from severe dysfunction, if you've come from abuse, if you want to avoid the drama, if you just want to do it your own way, elope, have a good time. They may be angry, they may not understand, but there's probably going to be a lot of people that are really happy that you did what you wanted.
Like me, I was really happy. And it was great the way you guys did it too, because I was going for Nine Gates Mystery School and for 2 weeks, and you guys had moved, you eloped, and then you moved out here to Reno. And so let's see, I was able to get into your place a couple weeks before you arrived. So I did the mom thing, of course, and stocked it with some food and some little stuff for you guys. And you arrive and I was gone. So I missed the first 10 days. Wasn't quite 10 days. Anyways, I missed a couple of days of your arrival, but you guys picked me up from the airport. And of course, I cried like a baby. And
Seeing the dog, not us.
oh, it's always about Rosie. No. And then you guys dropped me to get my car because it was being serviced. And you just said, how do you feel about a son-in-law? And I was like, oh, no. I was joking because I knew in the past that that wasn't something that Talbot was really keen on. And but you guys had talked about eloping for a couple of years, and all that. Anyways, and so it was just great to celebrate that. And the funny thing was that when you guys said, you know, or announced that you had eloped, the first question was, you're not mad? So why would you ask me that question?
Because I knew the other parent would be very mad, and sure enough, that was true. But also because I knew that you would have wanted to have been there to celebrate with us.
Oh, well, I was standing right there celebrating with you. I may not have been a part of the ceremony or the pictures or whatever, but I'm still celebrating. So, and yeah, you know, my philosophy is same as yours, obviously, and that is it's about the two of you. And, you know, coming from somebody who's been married twice, going through little weddings like my first, I'll share this story. Most people don't know this about me. My first wedding, to your father, it was in my parents' backyard. I was 18, couldn't afford, well, 19. I couldn't afford much. My parents didn't af couldn't afford much, and so the church that I belonged to, and they had all the ladies came together and made the cake and the food, and we set it out on picnic tables in the backyard, and you know, the pastor married us and all that sort of thing. And it was just this very simple. I remember going to the thrift store to get my wedding dress, so it was just one of those very small, humble kind of things, right? And then the second wedding was a party like hell. Oh my God. I mean, we partied hard.
Good
It was
time.
fun. It was fun. I could tell you, he and I could plan a good party. And it was in Key West, and we spent the whole week before the wedding basically just debauchery and with all the wedding guests. And I know you and your brother and significant others were you know, doing your thing, enjoying the whatever was offered and all that sort of thing.
Fun.
But anyways, I mean, I will say it was a fun party, but it was expensive. And could I have done without it? Yeah. You know. So anyways, I appreciate the elopement and You know, would I ever get married again? I'm open to it, but I don't know that it's on my plate. So, but if I did, it would definitely be one of those just very simple. I don't know. I have this fantasy. We'll talk about the fantasy thing, right? Because I think, you know, going back, kind of leading into the whole Valentine's Day romantic love, is that it's all based on fantasy. It's based on expectation, right? This romanticizing of the happily ever after, the Cinderella story, you know, all that sort of thing, the Prince Charming and how he comes and rescues her and happily ever after kind of thing, right? And so, you know, it's not to say I don't still have a little bit of that in me, because I love the idea of being with someone who just brings out the best in me and, you know, I and them, and basically what your vows stated, you know, I love all that. So I have the fantasy of having a little ceremony at the top of Mount Rose, where I like to, I know. So, but who knows? Yeah. May never happen, but it's kind of fun to think about. So what about you and this whole fairy tale bullshit?
Oh, we can curse on here?
Oh, fuck yeah. It's great. Internet. It's internet
I've
radio.
Been holding back. Oh, okay, great. I've been censoring myself. the Valentine's fantasy, or what specifically?
Whichever one you want to go with.
Any of it?
Yeah, I mean, because here we are, we're talking about love, and I don't want to disparage anybody from being in love. I mean, being in love is great, and it's more than just a feeling, though. It's action. It's a being of one of itself, you know. So, anyways, keep talking about
that's true.
Three questions.
It's true. The you know, what you point to with Valentine's Day, right? It's I think my perspective, it's for like parents to do with their kids, because it's very cutesy. You get some chocolates. It's a nice, like, you know, some teddy bears, some thinking of you cards or flowers or whatever. It's a day to make an effort. It's also for new couples, because it's like, oh, this is so exciting. Like, this is our first one together. You can see why you might want to celebrate it. But I also think in some people, it's their favorite holiday. Totally fine. Some people's favorite holiday is Halloween or Christmas. It is what it is, right? Personal choice. But I also think that for a lot of couples that have had time in, you know, why do I need one day to show you how much I care about you and I love you? Why do I have to buy you things, you know, when I'm with you the other 364 days of the year, putting in effort to make this relationship work, to show you that I am showing up, that I'm trying, that we're having the hard conversations, that we are finding resolution, we're having fun, we're doing the things that make us us. You know, do I really need to buy you a teddy bear and chocolate? If it's that important to you, I can probably do that for you. But if you don't care, then I'd be happy. Maybe we just go for a nice walk or to a movie, or, you know, I can make you dinner. You know, and if it's like, well, I see it as a special day, let's do something, fine, then we will curate that. But again, you know, we also have to make that known to our partners, and we can't just expect them to say, oh, it's Valentine's Day, get me something, or I will get my partner something. How do they know? What if they don't care about it? They might assume you don't care about it. So we have to have that conversation. Do you care about Valentine's Day? Do you want anything? Eh, no, really, I'm good. Now, if you say you're good and you're not good, you're still not going to get anything. Do not be disappointed, because you did not speak up for yourself. You That's have right. to say, I really would like a box of chocolate to share with you on the couch while we watch a Nicolas Cage movie. Okay. Very specific. I can do that.
I actually said that to my boyfriend. I said, not chocolates, but I said, because he asked me, he was like, do you want to do anything for Valentine's Day? And I'm like, what would make it special for me is a poem from you. Mm-hmm. And that's what I got. So, you know, it was just, that's all I, and, you know, that leads me into thinking about love languages too, because, you know, my partner's not somebody who is a gift giver. That's not his love language, but that is mine. And so I have to watch myself when I overgive and I don't get much in return as far as commodity, if you will. And it starts making me question. I'm like, does he not love me? Does he not care about me, or whatever? But his love language is quality time. And so, you know, he will say, why don't you come over and hang out with me and my son while we're watching football? He's a football fanatic, and you know, and just be with us, right? So that to me is his love language, his way of showing love. But it sometimes it gets a little dicey, and I think that's also where, you know, going back to Valentine's Day, it's expectations and stating them. What is it that you really need and want? So, you know, for me this year, I'm going to ask him for a bottle of my favorite tequila that I usually end up getting for a special occasion.
So if you want to put a little bow on it, even better.
Exactly. So, yeah. But with the whole, I mean, again, goes to expectation. What about singles, people who are single? You know, often there's that whole, okay, this is a time for self-love, right? And I think that's important, but I'm a little disenchanted with that too, because, you know, you have that whole thing of you have to be your best partner in order to attract the partner into your life, you know? And I'm, again, there's a little bit of bullshit to that, you know?
Yeah. Well, if you're like, oh, I'm just waiting until I'm good for someone to come along or to partner, honey, you might be waiting forever. Because we are constantly healing. We are constant works in progress. The bar will always be moving, or the line will always be moving. I'm not good at this yet, or I'm not good enough for this yet. Okay, well, you know what? That other person, the person that you really want, is also not good at stuff. They're not where they want to be. But the point is to come together and help each other be better, help each other grow, witness each other. So yes, like the self-love, of course. If you're just like, if you're newly single, let's say you got out of a really bad relationship, I'm making the assumption that you're probably just like, screw y'all. I am going to give myself some self-love. We're going to have a bath. I'm going to have my favorite movie. We're going to have a glass of wine. I'm going to buy myself some roses. This feels really good this year. It also could be enjoying time with your friends. You know, we call it Galentine's Day, where all the girls get together. We go do something fun. Go out to dinner, go get dessert, whatever it is. Like, okay, cool. I'm going to celebrate with you guys today. It can be connecting, yeah, with a family member. Sometimes when we're feeling low about ourselves, one of the best things we can do is to give that love to somebody else. So maybe that takes on the form of volunteering. Maybe that takes on, if you're religious or spiritual, giving yourself over to, say, maybe we're going to the church and or the synagogue or the mosque, and we're just giving ourselves over to God or spirit or whatever you believe in. Maybe that feels really good, connecting with the soul and having that love.
Yeah. Getting in nature, giving nature love, you know, not only is that good for you, it's good for nature. So, I mean, you think, oh, I digress, but I'm just like, because we work from home, right? I'm inside a lot, that it's like, oh, I need to get outside. Thank God for Rosie. If anybody listening doesn't know Rosie, she's my grand dog. So Tatiana and Talbot have a bulldog pug mix who is just the sweetest baby angel in the world. And now that they're here, I can't believe I went 6 years. I think we were Four. Lived apart. No, I moved out in 2019. So it's been 5 years since I lived near you. It's been 5 years. So
we moved here last year, so 4.
Wow. Okay. We'll split hairs. Fine. 4 years, whatever. Too long. I just can't believe I went so long not being able to have personal interaction with Rosie on a regular basis. So now I get her again.
She does not give a shit about us when I say grandma me. Oh my goodness. Bye.
Exactly. Which I love. And the reason I'm bringing her up is because she is one of the main reasons that I can get outside and go for a walk or just connect with nature. We go for hikes and stuff like that. And I love that. So, you know, that's another thing about Valentine's Day. Give love to your pets, or, you know, make sure your animals have that love. If you're like, I don't want to do the romantic love thing. Well, if you have a pet, then give it to them, you know, let them give it back to you.
A pet, a plant. If you have kids, make it about your kids.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you're single, a single parent raising your kids, like, yes, I am sure that you do your very best every single day, but this is also a fun time to bond with your kids every year of like we're going to do something together. Go take a pottery class together. Go and do like a trampoline thing. Go take them on a hike. Go, you know, roller skating or biking in the neighborhood together. And that might sound normal, but you can make it a very special Valentine's way of doing it. You know, a little Valentine's scavenger hunt.
Yeah. Yeah, why not? Yeah, I just had a thought. One of our friends, he and his wife they leave their Christmas tree up all year round. And they decorate it for each holiday.
I love that.
And I love Christmas because I love the lights. And I love my little, I have a little 4 foot pre-lit Christmas tree. And when I took it down this year, my boyfriend's like, I kind of miss that tree. And I was like, I know, it was so cute. I may pull it back out and decorate it for Valentine's Day.
I like that.
I think that's a fabulous idea. And then I'll do it for Easter and maybe Passover. Maybe I'll do like a international one, you know, to celebrate some of the different international holidays throughout the year.
That'd be
So,
cool.
yeah, multicultural, that sort of thing. Anyways, just some ideas to do. Okay, so let's dissect this whole fairy tale happily ever after.
My favorite.
Exactly. No one ever tells you what happens after.
Nope. We always see Cinderella, Snow White, princess being whisked off by Prince Charming. You can be Jasmine and Aladdin, you know, Ariel and Prince Eric. It doesn't matter. It's always, oh my God, they got married. They fell in love and now they're happily ever after. What the fuck does that mean?
Right.
It doesn't mean shit.
Right.
It means you fell in love. Great. Guess what? That's when people are like, cool, I've made it. I have to do nothing else. Lies. It's bullshit. If you've ever seen This Is 40, and even if you haven't, go watch it. But it's very key on what life looks like after the honeymoon stage, when the work has to be done, and they have
What's
children
it called
and a
again?
baby. This Is 40?
This Is 40, yeah. Okay.
Allison Mann, I think is her name, and Paul Rudd, and they have kids in the movie, so it's even more complicated, but they're trying to figure themselves out, who they are as individuals, who they are as a couple. They're working through their stuff, then they have to manage their kids. It's a whirlwind. It's everything that everyone goes through in life. But that is what it looks like. Can we do the work? Do we choose to be with this person? Happily ever after is a farce, right? It is not that it's just going to magically happen. No relationship just magically happens. We have to work on it. You're not magically the best parent in the world. You're not magically the best pet owner or plant owner. My God, I've killed every plant I've ever owned. It's work. It's work. I have not been the best partner in the past with my current relationship, with previous relationships. I've had faults and flaws, and thank God I've learned from them so that I understand myself better and I can articulate what I need in those moments when I'm feeling like old patterns might surface. But it's work, right? It's also recognizing the other person's triggers. Okay, well, now that I know this, I'm going to do my best to, one, notice it and to not trigger you on purpose. And when I do, I'm going to apologize and take ownership. And I'm going to learn from that. I know you have baggage. You're not a perfect person because I'm not a perfect person. And that's really hard for those of us who have, excuse me, strived for perfection because that's how we feel we can be worthy. Right? It keeps us safe from criticism. It keeps us safe from confrontation and conflict. And it also is to our detriment because we create this incredibly anxious state of being. And when you can let that go of, I'm not perfect, but I have found someone who is willing to accept me and all my flaws, who allows me to make mistakes, take ownership for them, learn from them. They hold me accountable, right? They're going to say, hey, that was messed up. I don't like how you did that. I don't like what you said. That really hurt my feelings. Oh, man. Ouch, that really hurts because I'm supposed to not do that to you. But we're not robots. If you are and you look like a human, God bless you. But like, you're tricking all of us. But we're humans. We have issues. I talk to clients every week like, oh my God, I have so many problems. I'm fucked up. I'm like you and the rest of us.
Yeah, welcome. I always say that in my videos. And I'm just going to put a little blurb in here real quick for the audience that if I don't get to astrological stuff today, I'm perfectly okay with that because this is such a rich conversation. But you can find me as well as Tatiana and I on YouTube. And so just go to my YouTube channel and sign up and you'll get the energetic and astrological updates each week there as well. So anyways, but one of the things that I say very often in my videos is we're perfectly imperfect humans.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but like you, and I know that this is somewhat energetic, somewhat individual, but also genetic, is that I have that perfectionism because I like, you know, I don't like conflict, and I don't want to, you know, I have to be seen as having my shit together, and because otherwise maybe somebody won't trust me, or I'll be seen as weak and vulnerable. And I've been preyed on before, and I don't mean preyed over. I mean, prey, P-R-E-Y.
Yes.
When I've been vulnerable and it's been used against me. And so I have trauma around being vulnerable. And so, you know, that also plays into this idea of being perfect, you know. But I think, you know, it goes back to that self, this is, well, self-love also, of not beating ourselves up, that when we do make mistakes, if the mistakes become patterns, then we've got an issue. But if you make a mistake because you went unconscious, or you did something, you know, because you were just overly emotional and weren't really thinking about it and all that, okay, it happens, you know, you apologize for it and you move on. So.
Yeah, take accountability. And that's really hard for a lot of people, because that accountability goes into that shameful weak place.
Right.
Our parents probably mostly a lot of them, and some did, God bless them, but a lot of them did not apologize to us as children, because one, they were probably not apologized to as children, and so on and so forth, but they see it as shameful. They see it as weak. If I apologize to my kid, then I've done something wrong, which you have, and they know that you have. They know something's not right, but they want you to take ownership, and they want to know how you're going to change it. And if they've done something wrong, they do need you to point that out, hold them accountable in a very loving and kind way of, this is how we're both going to work on this issue. It is not shameful. It is not weak to apologize to your child for yelling at them, for making a mistake, for not knowing something, for doing the wrong thing, or not doing anything at all.
Yeah.
And it's this framework of weakness. If I'm vulnerable, my kids can take advantage of me. No, not quite. If you're vulnerable, your kids get to see what that looks like. You get to model that for them. And so for those of us that haven't had that modeled for us, we have to teach ourselves how to be accountable. And oh God, it's such a painful process. It hurts to say I'm wrong. It hurts to say I messed up as an adult, because usually we're just like shirking it off. We're like, oh, you'll get over it. We'll sweep it under the rug. We'll move on.
Well, you know, there's a light and shadow to everything, right? When do you take too much ownership of something?
And there is that. Yes. Over apologizing is also a coping skill, in a sense, of trying to move past the thing that's happening out of fear, out of someone holding a grudge against you, gaslighting you, whatever. It shows up a lot in dysfunctional relationships. It shows up a lot in abuse. If you find yourself over-apologizing, the key here is to recognize what is yours to own and what is theirs to own. And even if they don't take ownership, it's still not your job to apologize for them. At some point, we all have to be adults and step into that adult self and take ownership for who we are. And that includes making those changes. And so, yes, I have been personally a chronic over-apologizer in relationships. And at some point, it gets to the point of, you know, self-deprecation. It can. I'm sorry for, you know, we go as far
I'm
as
sorry
I'm
for
sorry
breathing.
For existing.
Exactly.
I didn't mean to exist. Oh my God, can you forgive me? I can't unbirth myself. Yeah, but I don't want you to die. Yeah, but that's what it seems like you want.
Right.
Because otherwise you're going to give me the cold fucking shoulder for 3 goddamn days.
Right.
Which is also very manipulative. That's a huge manipulation tactic. If you're going through that, I'm so sorry. And please, like, find some support to be able to work through that, because that is not right. That's someone denying your existence. Right. And that is very cruel.
Right.
You know, like, please don't withdraw your love from me. Please don't leave me. Please don't whatever. Right. We're trying to keep whatever it is from abandoning us. So we might over apologize.
Right. Yeah. I think there's a real strength in the ownership piece of like, yeah, you're right. I fucked that up, you know? But like you're also, we're talking about is there does come a point where you just have to say, you know what? That's your perception. I'm not going to own that one. That doesn't feel true for me. And I'll just remind the audience too, is that your body doesn't lie. Your body's always telling you what's true for you. So trust that. So if somebody's projecting, I had a client ask me just the other day or this morning even, when do I know that I'm being kind, or because she accused me of being mean. And so when do I know if I'm being mean or I'm being kind? And so when I was answering that question for her, I'm like, well, intention drives everything, number one, and your body is going to respond accordingly. And if your intention is to be mean, your energy is going to show that. I said, but if someone's accusing you of something and you check in with yourself and you're like, my intention's not being mean. My energy doesn't say I'm being mean. This isn't about me. I'm not going to own it. Mm-hmm. That's about her projecting onto you something that's happening for her that she doesn't want to own.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So there may be some inside internal dialogue where she's mean to herself, or she's, you know, sees the world as being mean or others being mean because there's something going on inside of her that's making her feel less than. Right.
Right.
So that's why, you know, I always try and bring people back to the body. Does that feel true to you? You know, so many people will reach out and say, I heard, or I talked to this reader, or I listened to this YouTube person talking, and they said this about, you know, cancers or about Scorpios or whatever, you know, and it's like, well, does that ring true for you? Well, no. So doesn't apply to you.
You know, if the shoe fits.
Right. Right. So again, go back to that inner wisdom. Everybody has their own innate wisdom. And that's the thing, you know, my philosophy, as you know, was when it comes to parenting, was I didn't know what was best for you and Lake. I mean, everybody was like, I'm the parent. I know what's best. And I'm like, I didn't know what's best. I believed, and my philosophy was, you know what's best for you, but you needed time and experience to discover what that was. And my role was to create a safe environment for you to do that.
So. Yes. And this is also why, you know, authoritarian people will view someone who is creating a safe space as very permissive, because you're not fully grasping your child by the reins and smacking them into submission. Oh my God, they're unruly.
Right.
Jesus. No, you're cultivating critical thinkers. You're cultivating a space where you can be yourself and come to you with complaints, where we can have discussions where I might be cursing at 15 years old. So long as it's not at you, that's okay. And you recognize that.
Right.
Anyway, but
yeah, I mean, yes. Like I say, the permissive piece, well, let's just say this. There were times where I would discipline. I was not an overly permissive parent to the point where I just excused all your bad behavior. That, you know, but it was one of those of knowing. It was like the other day when Tim and I were skiing and some kids come right really close to his dad and I, and Tim went after these kids. And the father comes up, and Tim's kind about it, but he's very direct with these kids. Like, you guys need to slow down. You almost ran over my father, my girlfriend. You could have hurt somebody, you know, not just yourselves and all that. And the father comes up, he's like, is there a problem? And so Tim's explaining, you know, what just happened. And the father's like, well, I didn't see it. That's your answer? You didn't see it? And he was skiing behind us, right? And so I immediately went to, if those were my kids, they wouldn't get away. I would look at them and say, you better slow down. You listen to what he says. This is a dangerous sport. And, you know, you need to apologize.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you correct, you know, there would be correction, but
there's a learning opportunity here. Yes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
And going back to, you know, kind and mean and those kinds of things. And, you know, does this apply to me? There's a lot of nuances that right. show up. There's a lot of questions that we ask. There's a lot of things we have to contemplate. You know, it's not, we want it to be black and white. We want it to be a very concrete answer about things, because that gives us satisfaction. It gives us something to glom onto.
And a I'm false sorry, sense of security.
Correct. Because that's not the way the world works. There's so much gray area. Do I have a conversation with this person? Simple question, not a simple answer.
Right.
Do I keep this relationship in my life? Simple question, not a simple answer. And you're probably not going to show up to that within 24 hours. You might, you know, if you truly know deep inside of you, you can feel that in you what the right answer is, you're just denying it. You might come to that answer very quickly. But for a lot of us, there is a very deep process on, do I keep these people? Do I talk to this person? Do I continue doing what I'm doing? What patterns of myself do I need to check? Am I perfect? No. I don't want to sit with that either, but I have to. There's a lot of nuance. The maybes, the coulds, the possibilities, the probablys, the all of those words. Not the definites, not the I will, this will solve this. No, it might solve. It can solve. It can work. Anything could be anything. But there's a lot of nuance to what we're talking about today. And there's a lot of nuance in the questions that you get asked every day, just like the ones I get asked.
Right. Well, I think the image I have, and this is just my dyslexia kicking in, is that it's like every time you ask that question, you turn the knob of a door and you open the door. And what's on the other side of the door is a whole nother world to be explored. Not just one thing. There's not just like an empty room with a box. But even if that was it, there's still infinite possibilities there.
Right.
You know? So, and that's part of the human experience, is that we step into these different infinite possibilities. And I have so many more questions. I'm just looking at time, making sure we're staying on time. I want to go into the ownership, accountability, apology, that sort of thing, from a lens of the internal. So if you're working through something internally, and this is, you know, going back to the nuances and stuff too, but you're working, let's just say that, for example, my boyfriend says something to me that pissed me off, triggers me, right? Or just, you know, the dynamics of it. I'm triggered by something. And I sit and I process it and I work with it. And I never share with him what it was, because was it something that he should own and I should address, or I work through it, I've addressed it, then do I say something to him? Right.
I'm a big fan of the second one. And this is also something I was talking about with some couples, right? Where this is a big trigger for me. Well, it's also a big trigger for me, right? The same situation for different reasons.
Right.
But I need to voice how I feel. Maybe not in that moment.
Right.
Maybe you can say, instead of voicing how you feel and having a big blow up when your partner comes to you with honesty, knowing that it's going to cause some kind of disruption, that exploding on your partner is going to make your partner very much less likely to be honest with you in the future.
Right.
Which is probably what started all of this, right? Not being honest.
Right.
So can you in those moments say, thank you for bringing this to my attention? And you go and you take time, because it's going to emotionally arouse you. It's emotionally arousing your partner because they have to be honest with you. And that's going to be really scary because they know how you're going to react. Prove them wrong. Take your time. Go process. What does this mean for me? How is this showing up? I'm really angry. I don't like those people. I'm not happy that there was an interaction. Whatever it is, sit with it. When you're calm, and by calm, I mean, if you're thinking that it's been enough time between when the event happened and when I've been thinking about it, and I should be able to say something now. It's been 20 minutes. It's been 2 hours. If you feel yourself getting emotional, whether that's getting angry, getting ready to cry, uncertain of how your tone is going to come out, pump the brakes. We still need to take some time. It may be the next day that you talk about it after you've slept, right? We need to sleep because that regulates our entire body, our nervous system, our emotions, regulatory body habits, practices, whatever, and functions. And when we wake up in the morning and we're still feeling a type of way because we know that we're going to have this conversation, can we meet our person with a good morning? How did you sleep? Can we give them a hug? Can we say, I really was thinking about what happened? It might be a non-issue for them where they have no idea. But again, if they're not aware of your triggers, they can't do anything about it. So when you're thinking about these things of like, oh my God, what they said really triggered me. You've done your process. You bring it up to them when you're ready, right? Morning routine, we have the hug. Hey, thinking about what this happened, this is what showed up for me. And I have been trying to connect the dots. And I think it's because of, you know, when X event happened or this person did something very similar. And in the future, I think what I'd like for you to do is this. Is that something we can try? They're not going to be able to apologize for something they don't know they caused harm.
Right.
And so they don't necessarily have to apologize for this either, right? Oh my God, I didn't know. Sometimes that acknowledgement is enough.
Right.
Sometimes they could say, I'm so sorry that happened. Yes, I'm happy to work on this thing for you. Or it's like, yeah, that sounds good. Thank you for making me aware. Or even, you know, if again, all these nuances, if they come back and they're just like, that doesn't really make sense to me, then that's the time for us to, again, take a step back and just try to calmly, empathetically explain, this is how it shows up for me. This is what it's like for me. Maybe give them a few examples of something you know about in their life where they can connect those dots. A lot of people have a hard time with empathy because they think empathy is going through the same thing that somebody else has been through, and it's not.
Right.
It's connecting with that emotion, that underlying piece, that disappointment, that fear, that anger, the surprise, the shock, the disgust, dismay, whatever it is. I know what that feels like. Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. Did that answer your question?
Beautifully. Beautifully. Okay. And looks like we're up on our time.
Part 2.
So, yes, to be continued, of course. We're going to do this again. We're going to play again. So where can people find you before we end the show?
I am a resident in counseling in the state of Virginia currently. So if anybody, if anything I've said resonated with you today and you're in the state of Virginia looking for a therapist, a mental health counselor, you can find me on Psychology Today. You can find me at the Pathways Family and Community Services website. I have an Instagram called Therapist Tatiana, where I seldomly actually post things, but I put things on my story. But it is an outlet. And if that's easier way for us to connect to get all the ins and outs of where to find me, that works too.
Awesome. Thank you, my darling daughter, for playing, for your wisdom and insights, and just being so wonderful. I love you.
I love you too. Thanks for having me.
All right, you guys, stay tuned for all the other great shows at 1-2 Radio, and looking forward to connecting with you again next week, and also on my YouTube channel, and I'm on social media, and I'm at 1-2 Listen. All right, you guys, take care.